We can remember it for you wholesale. He woke up from a dream about Mars. He often dreamed about waking up on Mars, about the valleys and the feeling of another world. As he woke up, the dream and the desire grew. "Are you getting up or not?" his wife Kirsten asked. "If you are, push the button to make coffee."
"Okay," Douglas Quayle answered.
He walked into the kitchen and sat down at the table. He pushed the button on the stove and made hot coffee as she had asked.
"I will go. I will see Mars before I die," he said to himself.
But he knew it was an impossible dream. He was only a government clerk, not an important official or a government agent. Only high-level workers could see Mars. Kirsten reminded him of his low position every day, and she was right. She thought it was her job to bring him down to Earth and to remind him that he would never see Mars. He sat in the kitchen and stared at the wall.
"Are you dreaming again?"
asked his wife as she walked into the kitchen.
"Yes," he answered.
He looked out of the window and saw all the people going to work.
"Were you dreaming about a woman?"
Kirsten asked.
"No," he answered.
"I was thinking about a god, the god of war. I'm dreaming of the craters on Mars and the vegetation that grows on that planet."
"Listen to me," said Kirsten. "The bottom of our ocean is much more beautiful than Mars. Everyone knows that. We can take a holiday and go to the bottom of the sea."
She stopped suddenly.
"Why aren't you listening to me?"
she shouted. He got up and walked out of the kitchen.
"I'm going to work," he said.
"What's going to happen to you? You're getting worse each day,"
she screamed after him.
"I don't know where all this will lead."
"To Mars,"
he answered, and closed the front door with a bang. Half an hour later, Douglas Quayle got out of the taxi and read the sign on the shop in front of him. Recal Incorporated. He opened the door and walked in.
"Good morning, Mr. Quayle,"
said the young receptionist. She picked up the video phone. As her boss appeared on the screen, she said,
"Mr. Douglas Quayle is here, Mr. McLean. May I send him in?"
She pointed to a door on the opposite side of the office. Quayle walked in the direction she had indicated. He felt uncertain about what he was about to do, but he opened the door and entered the large room. A middle-aged man sat behind an enormous desk.
"Come in and sit down, Douglas,"
McLean smiled.
"So you want to remember that you went to Mars, is that right?"
Quayle sat down. He was worried.
"I'm not sure," he said. "It costs a lot, and I don't actually go anywhere or get anything."
"That's not true," said McLean. "We will give you things to prove that you went on a trip to Mars, and you will have the memories we give you. Here, I'll show you."
He took something out of a drawer in his desk.
"This is a ticket. It proves that you went to Mars and returned. Here are some photographs that you took on Mars. Here are some souvenirs which will arrive from Mars next month."
He looked up at Quayle.
"Don't worry. You will believe that you went. You won't remember me, and you won't remember Recal. We guarantee the trip will be real in your mind. 2 weeks of memory with every detail. Keep our address. If sometime in the future you doubt that you have been to Mars, you can return here to complain. We will refund all of your money."
"But I didn't really go," Quayle said. It doesn't matter what memories you put into my brain and what proof you give me. I wasn't a secret agent with Interplan either, though you say you can make me remember being one.
Mr. Quayle,
explained McLean patiently,
you told us in your letter that you don't have enough money to fly to Mars, but that you want to go very much. You can't really be a secret agent either. Here at Recal Incorporated, we help you believe your dreams are real through our memory implants.
But is a memory implant good? Asked Quayle.
It's better than the real thing, Douglas. People usually forget a lot of details about real holidays. Here the memories are implanted very deeply. You won't forget anything. The Mars implant was created by experts who have spent years on Mars. It is full of details that will make you believe you walked in the craters there.
Well, I'll never do it in real life, so I'll try this, said Quayle finally. McLean stood up.
Congratulations, Mr. Quayle. You're now on your way to Mars as a secret agent. Or, I should say, you will soon believe that you have been on your way. You will arrive back on Earth at 4:30 this afternoon. A taxi will take you home from our office. And best of all, you won't remember anything about Recal Incorporated. Now, if you would like your memory implant, we can begin the process. As soon as you pay the fee.
Quayle paid. Then he stood up and followed McLean to the laboratory. He was nervous. He was worried that something might go wrong. But he did not know what it could be. McLean wished him good luck and returned to his office. A few minutes later, the intercom on McLean's desk buzzed. A voice said,
Mr. Quayle is ready for the operation now, sir. Do you want to watch this one, or should we continue without you?
It's a routine program, Lou, said McLean. We do about 20 of these a month. I don't think there will be a problem.
McLean opened his drawer again and took out various items. A minuscule transmitter, a code book, money, and several other things to remind Quayle of his trip to Mars. McLean wanted to put these things into Quayle's house while the technicians were implanting the false memory in Quayle's brain. Quayle would find them when he returned home. They would provide him with important proof of his visit to Mars. The intercom buzzed again.
Mr. McLean, something strange has happened. I think you should come in here now. Quayle is under sedation, but...
I'm on my way.
McLean entered the laboratory. Lowe bent over the bed and said to Quayle,
Can you tell Mr. McLean what you just told us?
Quayle looked at McLean. His eyes were hard and brilliant.
What do you want now? He said harshly. You have broken my cover. Get out of here before I kill you all.
Lowe asked,
How long were you on Mars?
1 month.
And what did you do there?
I told you, I was an agent for Interplan. Now leave me alone.
Lowe said quietly, This is a tough man, Mr. McLean.
He won't be, McLean said. After we remove this memory for him, he'll be as calm as he was before.
He turned to Quayle and said,
So this is why you wanted to go to Mars so badly.
Without opening his eyes, Quayle said,
I never wanted to go to Mars. They assigned it to me.
He opened his eyes and stared at McLean.
This is a very strong truth drug. It has reminded me of things I'd completely forgotten.
Then he thought,
I wonder about Kirsten. Maybe she's part of the plan. Maybe she's an interplan contact keeping an eye on me. McLean said,
Please believe me, Mr. Quayle. We had no idea about any of this.
I believe you, Quayle said. He sounded very tired. The other drugs were taking effect. Lowe turned to his boss.
He's telling the truth, he said. He actually went to Mars as a secret agent. He remembers everything under sedation, but he has no conscious memory of it. The government must have erased his conscious memories. All he remembered was that going to Mars was something special, and so was being a secret agent. The government couldn't erase those things because they're not memories. They're desires.
What are we going to do? The second technician, Keeler, asked McLean. If we put in a false memory, I don't know what will happen. He might remember some of the genuine trip as well as some of the false trip. The confusion might make him psychotic. I think we should wake him up without giving him a false memory implantation and send him out of here. This is dangerous.
I agree, McLean said. But what will he remember when he leaves here? He will probably have some vague memory of the actual trip. He will think our programming was defective, and he will remember coming here. Unless you want me to erase that, asked Lowe. No, no, McLean said. We shouldn't do any more with this man than we have to. Let's put him in a taxi and return half his fee.
Douglas Quayle sat in the taxi on his way back home.
It's good to be back on Earth, he said to himself.
He had forgotten things about his trip already. He only had a vague memory of the craters, the atmosphere, and the plant life. He had brought back some of the Martian plants as a souvenir. He reached into his coat pocket to get them. He found an envelope instead. He opened it and was surprised to see 570 poscreds inside. Where did I get this money? He wondered. There was also a piece of paper in the envelope. He took it out and read. One half fee returned. Signed, McLean.
Recall, he said.
Recall what, sir or madam?
Asked the robot driver of the taxi. Do you have a phone book?
Yes, sir or madam.
Quayle found the address and said,
Take me to Recall Incorporated immediately. Yes, sir or madam,
said the robot driver and turned the taxi around. Quayle reached for the video phone next to him and called home. Kirsten's face appeared on the screen.
I've been to Mars, he told her.
You're drunk, she said. Or worse.
No, I'm not. It was a memory trip. I went to one of those memory places. But I don't think they did the procedure properly.
You are drunk,
said Kirsten, and she put down the phone.
She always acts as if she knows everything, and I know nothing, he thought.
A few minutes later, the taxi stopped outside a building with a neon sign in front. The receptionist looked at Quayle in surprise.
Oh, hello, Mr. Quayle, she said nervously. How are you? Did you forget something?
I want the rest of my money back, he said.
Your money? I think you are mistaken, Mr. Quayle. You came here to discuss going on a memory trip, but in the end you decided not to take one.
I remember coming here and being put under sedation, and I also remember Mr. McLean's promise that if I remembered my visit to Recall Incorporated, he would refund my money. But he only returned half. I want to speak to Mr. McLean. At once.
He walked down the corridor and entered the same big room. Now he was very angry.
My memory of my trip to Mars is vague, and I can clearly remember you, McLean. I've been cheated."
Usually, he avoided arguments, but now he was too angry to control himself.
"My apologies, Mr. Quayle. We will return all of your money. I'm sorry we couldn't help you. I admit we did nothing for you,"
said McLean cautiously.
"You didn't give me any of the items you said you would include to prove that I'd been to Mars. No tickets, no postcards, no photographs."
"Listen, Quayle," McLean said. "What if I told you?"
He stopped suddenly.
"Never mind."
He took his pen and gave Quayle a check for 570 poscreds.
"Let me give you some advice," McLean said. "Don't talk about your recent trip to Mars with anyone."
"What trip?"
"Well, the trip you vaguely remember. Pretend it never happened. Act as if you don't remember."
McLean began to sweat.
"It'll be better for all of us."
On his way home in the taxi, Quayle decided to write a letter of complaint to the local newspaper. He wanted to warn other people about Recal. He got home and sat down in front of his computer. He opened the drawer to take out some paper and recognized a small box. He opened it carefully. It was full of Martian plant life.
"But I didn't go to Mars," he thought.
Kirsten appeared at the door.
"Why are you home in the middle of the day?"
she asked accusingly.
"Did I go to Mars?" he asked her.
"You would know."
"No, of course not. You would know if you did. Aren't you always saying that you want to go?"
"I think I went," he said. "And I also think I didn't go," he added.
"Make up your mind."
"How can I? I have both memories inside my head, and I don't know which is real."
"Why can't you tell me the truth? You know the truth, don't you? They haven't done anything to your brain, have they?"
Kirsten said in a quiet, controlled voice,
"Douglas, if you don't stop this, I'm going to leave you."
"I'm in trouble." His voice was shaking. "Maybe I'm having a psychotic attack. That would explain everything." Kirsten put down the groceries she was holding.
"I wasn't joking, Douglas," she said quietly. "I'll phone you sometime. This is goodbye. I hope you get better soon. I really do. For your sake."
"Wait," he called out desperately. "Just tell me which memory is real." The front door closed. His wife had left him. Then a voice behind him said,
"Well, that's that. Now put your hands up, Quayle, and please turn around."
Quayle turned, but didn't raise his hands. A man in the Interplan Police Agency uniform stood there. He was pointing a gun at Quayle. He looked vaguely familiar. Quayle slowly put his hands up.
"You remember your trip to Mars?" the policeman said. "We know all your actions and thoughts. You have a teletransmitter installed in your head. It tells us everything."
"A teletransmitter?"
Teletransmitters were living organisms that had been discovered on another planet. He trembled with disgust. He realized there was something living in his brain, feeding, listening. The Interplan police used them. He had read about it in the newspaper.
"Why me?" said Quayle. "And what does this have to do with Recal?" he wondered.
"Basically," the Interplan policeman said, "this has nothing to do with Recal."
He pointed to his right ear.
"By the way, I'm still listening to your thoughts through the teletransmitter."
Quayle saw a small white plug in the policeman's ear.
"It doesn't matter anymore. but unfortunately, under the influence of the truth drug, you told everyone at Recal about your trip. They're very frightened. They wish they had never met you. They're right.
I never went on any trip, said Quail. It's a false memory implanted in me by Recal.
But then he thought of the box of Martian plant life in his drawer. How did that get there? Maybe it was one of the proofs planted by McLean.
You are beginning to remember enough to be difficult for us, said the policeman. There's no point in erasing your conscious memory again. If we do that, you'll probably go to Recal and start over. And we can't do anything about McLean and his company because we don't have jurisdiction over them. We only have control of our own people. Anyway, McLean hasn't committed any crime.
Why is it difficult for you if I remember my trip to Mars and what I did there? Asked Quail.
Because, said the policeman, what you did for us wasn't very good for our public image. You did things that we never want anyone to know that we do. You'll remember them soon, thanks to the truth drug. That box of Martian plant life has been in your desk drawer since you returned 6 months ago. We didn't know you had it until you remembered it on your way home from Recal.
A second Interplan policeman joined the first, and they began to talk to each other. Quail thought quickly. He was beginning to remember more. Suddenly, he remembered the reason they sent him to Mars and the job he did there. No wonder they had erased his memory.
Oh, God!
The first policeman said. Obviously, he had read Quail's thoughts.
Well, this is a far worse problem. It's as bad as it can get.
He walked towards Quail and pointed the gun at his head.
We've got to kill you now.
Tensely, the second policeman said,
Why immediately? Can't we simply take him to the Interplan head office? He's their responsibility.
He knows why it has to be immediately, the first policeman said.
Quail's memory had suddenly returned, and he understood why the man was worried.
I killed a man on Mars, said Quail. I got past 15 bodyguards. They all had guns like you two do.
He had been trained by Interplan to be an assassin. He knew just how to kill his enemies, and the policeman with the earplug knew what Quail could do. If he moved quickly enough, the gun fired. But Quail had already moved to one side, and he grabbed the gun from the policeman. He pointed it at both of them.
You won't use that gun on me, said the policeman. I can read your mind. You know it's finished. We know, too.
He held out his hand.
Come on, Quail. Give me the gun. I guarantee I won't kill you. We'll take you to the Interplan head office. Maybe they can erase your memory again. Someone higher up must decide what to do with you.
Quail, still holding the gun, ran out of the door.
If you follow me, he thought, I'll kill you, so don't.
He went down in the lift and walked out of the building into the crowd of people moving down the street. He reached the end of the street and looked back. The policeman hadn't followed him. Obviously, they'd picked up his tense thoughts. He had escaped this time, but what about next time? Finding him wouldn't be a problem, especially with the teletransmitter in his head. Ironically, they had given him everything he had asked for. Adventure, danger, and a secret trip to Mars.
If only it had been a false memory, he thought.
Quail sat on a park bench alone and watched the birds. Birds which had been brought from Mars.
Maybe I could return to Mars, he thought. But then what would happen?
The political organization, whose leader he had assassinated, would want to kill him, just like Interplan did. He began to walk through the park with his hands in his pockets. "You'll always be with me no matter where I go," he thought. "I'll make a deal with you," he thought to himself and to them. "Can you give me another false memory implant and make me believe that I live a normal life, that I never saw Mars and never saw an interplan uniform?" A voice inside his head said,
"We have already explained to you that that would not be enough. You'll never be happy with ordinary memories. You'll always look for something more."
Quail stopped in amazement.
"We communicated with you in this way on Mars," the voice continued. "Where are you now?"
"Walking," said Quail, "to my death." Then Quail had a new thought. "Suppose you give me a different type of false memory implant. Suppose you give me a memory to satisfy my desire. I could have been a famous space explorer or the richest man on Earth who gave all his money away. Wouldn't one of those be sufficient?" Silence. "Try it," he said desperately. "Get some of your top psychiatrists. Discover what my deepest desire is, please."
"Would you voluntarily come to Interplan?"
the voice inside his head asked.
"If we agree to arrange it, if it's possible, that is."
"Yes," said Quail.
"If it isn't possible and your real memories return like they did this time, then..."
There was a silence, and the voice continued.
"We will kill you. Do you still want to try?"
"Yes," said Quail. He knew he had no other choice.
"Come directly to our headquarters. We will have psychiatrists and specialists from Recal Incorporated waiting there to work on you. They will discover your deepest desire. Then we will take you to Recal, and they will implant the false memory. Good luck."
"Thanks," said Quail. He began to look for a robot taxi. At Interplan headquarters, the psychiatrist was waiting with McLean and two policemen.
"Mr. Quail," the Interplan psychiatrist said, "you have a very interesting desire. It isn't in your conscious thoughts. I hope you won't be too upset to hear about it. Unlike the fantasy of being an interplan agent, which was quite credible, this is a strange dream from when you were a child. In this dream, you are 9 years old. You are walking down a country road. A spaceship from another star system lands in front of you. You are the only person on Earth who sees it. The creatures inside are very small, and they want to invade Earth. Thousands of other ships will be on their way when this advance party gives them the signal. You stop the invasion by being kind to them. They show their appreciation by making a promise to you. They won't invade Earth while you're alive."
Quail laughed. "So, by simply being alive, I save the entire planet from invasion? I am, then, the most important person on Earth?"
"Yes, and this is a lifelong fantasy, one you have always had deep inside you," said the psychiatrist.
One of the policemen turned to McLean.
"Can you implant a memory that is so strange?"
he asked.
"Of course," answered McLean. "We can do any type of fantasy. We've had much more difficult fantasies to implant. In a few hours, he won't fantasize that he saved Earth. He will believe it really happened."
"You can start the job," said the policeman. "We have already erased the memory of his trip to Mars."
"What trip to Mars?" asked Quail. No one answered him. Two armed guards appeared, and they all went out to the car. they drove to Recal Incorporated.
"Nothing will go wrong this time," said McLean,
sweating.
"This has nothing to do with Mars or Interplan."
He shook his head.
"Stopping an invasion from another planet all by himself. How sweet."
"But very arrogant," said one of the policemen. "When he dies, the invasion starts. It's the most incredible fantasy I have ever heard. And to think we employed this man."
When they reached Recal Incorporated, the receptionist was waiting outside.
"Welcome back, Mr. Quayle. I'm sure everything will go better this time."
Lowe and Keeler took Quayle to the laboratory, and McLean took the policeman back to his office to wait. McLean opened the drawer and took out packets. 81, 20, and 6.
"What are those for?"
asked one of the policemen.
81 is a magic healing wand. This was given to Quayle by the aliens. Packet 20 is a document from the UN Secretary General thanking him for saving Earth. This isn't actually part of Quayle's fantasy, but we'll give it to him anyway. Packet 6 is a manuscript. It says who these aliens are and where they came from. It's in their language, so Quayle can't read it. However, he remembers them reading it to him in a language he could understand."
He turned to a policeman.
"You should take these to Quayle's house. When he arrives home, he will see them, and it will confirm his fantasy."
The intercom buzzed.
"Mr. McLean, I'm sorry to bother you. Something's come up. Mr. Quayle is under the truth drug, but..."
McLean and one of the policemen ran to the laboratory. Douglas Quayle lay on a bed, breathing slowly.
"We started interrogating him," said Lowe, white-faced, "to discover where to put the fantasy memory into his brain, and strangely enough..."
"They told me not to tell," mumbled Quayle. "That was the agreement. They said I wouldn't remember. But how could I forget something like that? They even gave me a manuscript. I've got it in my house."
McLean turned to the policeman.
"Well, I suggest you don't kill him. If you do, they'll return."
"They also gave me a magic invisible destroying rod," said Quayle, almost asleep. "That's how I killed that man on Mars. I keep the rod in my drawer next to the box of Martian plant life." The policeman turned and walked out of the laboratory without saying a word.
"I don't think he needs those packets," said McLean, "and he won't need the letter either. After all, the UN Secretary General will probably send him a real one now."